It's Erev Shabbat. The time is short. We'll just say a short Divrei Torah on the parasha that we're reading, Parashat Bo. Vayomer Adonai el Moshe Bo el Paro. Bo literally really means, Bo mean, I guess, is to come. Come to Paro. I would have used the word lech. Go to Paro. Anyway, that's a question. The Bala Turim points out, Kishaya omer lo lavo lebeto, haya omer lo bo. When he was telling him to go visit Paro in his palace, so God would use the word bo. Ushaya omedo lilech etzelamaima haya omed lech. So those are key words there. So bo el paro, go to his house. Lech, meet him by the river. That's a key. Actually, this is not the first time that God said bo. If you went back to Parashat Va'era, last week's parasha, in Perek Tet Pasuk Alev, Vayomer Adonai el Moshe Bo el Paro. Same exact words. Over there, the Orach Haim HaKadosh says, Klal Ze Beyadecha. Take this rule in your hands. Kol Makom Shiyomar Bo el Paro, Yechaben Nomar Lo Shiyikanes El Teraklin Shelo. Go into his palace, Belo Hashalat Reshut. Without asking permission. Just boil paro. Agam shayulo kemishpat ha-melachim shomrei ha-bayit. Even though, obviously, very good doctor, his guards. Afal pichen yi'ul v'yekanes shestum b'bani she'elat reshut. Don't ask permission. Ignore them. That's like telling somebody, just go see the president in the Oval Office. Let me go see him. Just go. Disregard everybody. But there's a guy with a gun at the door. There's security, there's electrocuted fence. Don't pay attention to nothing. Just go. There's helicopters, there's spaceships, there's drones. Don't pay attention. Just go. Walk in, don't pay attention. It's unbelievable. You would tell God, what do you mean don't pay attention? The problem, you tell me don't pay attention. Ki omram zal, ki kama shumrim hayu lefaro mezuyanim. He had armed protection. Arayot kelabim. That you never saw. Sometimes you see in front of the palace dogs. You know, guard dogs. You never saw lions. But all had lions there. So he had the jungle. He had a habitat. He had a zoo in front of his palace. He's also part of the zoo. And Moshe Rabbeinu would just walk by. The lions would tell him Baruch Haba. Nothing. ומצאתי ראיה ברורה לדבריהם. Ruach HaMikdash brings an incredible proof that Moshe Rabbeinu had open access to the palace. He was fearless. Borei Olam was with him. What's the proof? In this week's parasha, in Perek Yud, Pasuk Chafet, I don't know if you paid attention to that. וחזק השם את לב פרעו ולא אבא לשליחם. פרעו stubborn, not to let them go. ויאמר לו פרעו, לך מעליי. Let's get out of here. השמר לך, as I'm warning you, אל תוסף ראות פניי. I don't want to see you again. What is he threatening for? Just tell the gods, don't let him in. What does he have to tell Moshe? אל תוסף ראות פניי. I don't want to see anymore. What do you want to see anymore? What are you telling Moshe for? Just give the picture to the gods and say, if you see this man, I better come to the door. Don't let him in. You tell the lion, sick him. So Rahim HaKadosh learns from over here, Ki lama utzrach paro lehatrot b'moshe? Why did he have to warn Moshe? Hayalo letzavot la'avadav shomrei habayit. He should have spoken to the shomrei habayit. Ki ken minhag ha-melachim la'amid shomrei ha-melech. ולכן יצב שלא יניחו לכנס, אלא ודאי כי לא עמדו כנגדו. No, they couldn't stand in front of Moshe. They couldn't stop him. Moshe Rabbeinu walked in, pahad, on them pahad. The shomer needs a shomer. Ve'afilu arayot, even the lions. Ve'ze nes asum. This is one of the great miracles that we don't talk about enough. So I'm talking about it now for a couple of minutes. He says, Leze ya Hashem tzarich lomar bo el paro pirush hikanes ba'ale elav ve'lo tasim lebechal demoneya ba'olam. Don't worry about any interference or any impediment in your way. So therefore, he has to tell him in a strong language, bo! Just go. However, when Paro was outside, that was easy. Lech! There's no protection anyway. Therefore, you have access to him. Ubezman sheya Paro yotzea maima, haya omer lo lech el Paro, kisham en shomrim, liro mehem, listarek lomar elav, ale elav. Correct. Ele lezad she'en zman zera oila alicha, ki motzi bolo ha'tauv. They said, Lech. That's interesting. And that's why it says, Bo el Paro. Go to Paro. Get to him. You'll get to him. Don't worry about it. Don't be scared of anything. That's the sword of Bo. I like to add what the Zohar Kadosh says. If I'm talking to you and I want to escort with you, I say, Bo, come with me. Bo, talking to you. So whenever Moshe Rabbeinu would go to the palace, God would say, Bo, come with me. Bo el Paro, let's go. That's why they were afraid of Moshe, because Hashem was with him, the Shekhinah was with him. When Paro would go to the bathroom, the Shekhinah is not going to go with him to the bathroom. The Shekhinah doesn't go with him. There's Tum'ah. What was Paro doing by the river? He wasn't fishing. He was going to the bathroom. He was going to the bathroom. So Shekhinah is not going to go with his dirt. So therefore, God says to Moshe, I can't go with you on that one. Lech, you go yourself. So when he went to the palace, Bo, yalla, let's go. Let's go together. Come. Understand? So that's why there was pachad. They sensed that Moshe Rabbeinu was with somebody. Was with the Shekhinah. Seven and three is 10. That's correct. About 6 and 4. Also 10. Very good. So that's the big question over here. Is it 7 and 3 or is it 6 and 4? That's the big question of the day. Seemingly it's 7 and 3. Although I have proofs that it's also 6 and 4. What? Oh, that's a good question. What am I talking about? So because you asked, I'll explain. There's 10 plagues. In last week's parasha, there were 7 of the plagues. In this week's parasha, there are 3 remaining plagues. The Baal HaTurim says Bo is 3, Bet Aleph, implying that the last 3 plagues are in this week's parasha. Bo Gematria 3. I gave a remez last night in the shiur for those that attended, and I said actually 2 out of the 3 plagues are hinted in the word Bo. The Bet stands for Bechorot, which is Makat Bechorot in this week's parasha, and the Aleph stands for Arbe, which is also this week's parasha. Hoshech, well, that's not mentioned, that's in the dark, so you don't see that one, so therefore there's no mention of Hoshech in Parashat Bo, in the word. In any event, Rabotai, why would you separate these plagues from those plagues? I think I once saw that the 7 plagues have something in common that the last 3 plagues do not have in common. I think I saw that it said somewhere that the first 7 plagues, actually each one lasted for 7 days. It's the 7s, a whole week. And then there was 3 weeks in between each plague. If I'm not mistaken, well, clearly the last plague, Makat Bechor, didn't last for 7 days. That was in a second. Makat Choshech, they say, was only 6 days, 3 and 3. And if I'm not mistaken, there's a Hazal that says even Makat Arbeh was only 6 days as well. So therefore, they combine the seven with the seven, the sevens, and then the three that have all something in common that they weren't regular makot that lasted the same duration. That would be one reason why they would separate it. Although, when I open up the Haggadah Shel Pesach, which already Pesach's around the corner, Rabotai, so please don't forget to make your reservations. They're selling out on the tickets to Miami, so Pesach's coming, you have to make the, also don't forget the Matzot, also I have to remind you also. But Matzot you can get, but reservations are not that easy. In any event, so Pesach's right around the corner, we're already reading the Haggadah Shel Pesach. I made the following observation in Haggadah. It's a new observation. I'd like to reveal it today. Rabbi Yehuda made simanim for the 10 plagues. Datzach, Adash, Be'ahav. Everybody questions, what's the genius of making these simanim over here? Basically, he just took the first letter of all the plagues and made an acronym. Anybody can basically take 10 words and make a siman out of it. I don't think he became famous because of that. But the Biwuda became famous. The Biwuda, Yano Temem Simanim. Oh, that's a Chadash Ba'ala. I would refer you, if you're interested in knowing the secret, Rabbi Shimshon Masrapoli, in his famous letter that we customarily read on Erev Pesach, actually revealed what the secret is behind Datzach Adash Be'ahav. And after you read that letter, actually, Rabbi Yehuda deserves to become a national hero for what he did. Actually, was revealing Sodes Sodot. If you want to explain it on a simple level, the Gemara says that any time it says Rabbi Yehuda, it's either Rabbi Yehuda Yehuda ben Baba or Rabbi Yehuda ben Rabbi Elai. Both of them were known to be poor. They were impoverished. So, the custom is when we do the 10 plagues, we pour some wine into a bucket and then we discard it. Rabbi Yehuda was a poor man. So he couldn't afford to do 10 drops of wine. It's wasting wine. So he said, what about all the anim that can't afford it? So he said, okay, that's a chadash bahav. You can do the bridged version. So you do three. Instead of wasting all that wine, you do three drops in order to... So he was defending the anim. So that's, I wasn't giving you hadush on the Rashi Tevot. I was giving you hadush on the economy. How to save the drops. But you also see, Rabotai, that Rabbi Yehuda did something interesting. Datzach, fine. Adash, fine. But he paired the last four plagues together. Be'ahav, Barad Arbe, Hoshech Bechorot. Although that's not the way we have it in the Torah, we have it 7 and 3, but he combined Be'ahav. I mean, he could have broken up the Rashi Tevot in a 7 and 3 form, but he combined it. I don't have a problem with what he did. Leil Pesach is the night of fours. Everything is four. I don't have to, but the way he broke it up into a group of four. Barad, Arbe, Be'ahav. Everything on Leil Pesach is four. I don't got to go through the four items. The four kosot, that's one four. Any other fours The four Leshonot of Geulah. Any other fours Keneged Arba'a Banim, the Berat Torah, the four sons. Right? The four questions in the Manishtana. You look, the whole night. The whole Haggadah Shel Pesach is actually based on four Pesukim in the Torah, in Parashat Kitavo, right, in Bikurim. And you'll see many, many allusions to the number four. In this week's Parashah, when they brought the Korban Pesach, they had to take it 4 days before, also four. So you see over here, huh? Oh yeah, 4 days also, extension, exactly. Many, many, many different reasons. For kezayit, you have to eat of matzah. Many, many. So I don't have a problem. Rabbi Yehuda wanted to, get into the number four. So he's Be'ahav. He gave you the four. The Mefarshim say that actually there's a connection between Barad and Arbe. Again, I told you already. It put Barad in last week's parasha because it wants to combine it with the 7-day plagues. All the plagues in last week's parasha lasted 7 days. So therefore, Bara belongs there. But Rabbi Yehuda is reminding us, take that away, Bara and Rabbi are connected. Actually, if I had to say it, I would say that Barad is, what is it, the seventh plague? So I would say Barad is 7a and Choshech and Arbe would be 7b, if I had to say it correctly. 7a and 7b.
7 and
7a. 7a and 7b.
7 and 7b.
I would say it the way I said it, 7a and 7b. That would imply that they're actually two halves of one full makkah. I'll explain to you what I mean. You would say what, seven?
Horse racing is two horses. Seven, 7A.
Correct. So I didn't want to use the mashal in horse racing. So that's why specifically I said 7A and 7B, that nobody should think that I'm using horse racing as a model for the Torah. So I'm glad that I asked you why you said that. I had a suspicion that that's the reason, but I'm glad that I clarified that, and I'm glad that I stood my ground, that I said 7A and 7B, that we're not going to use aqueduct as the basis, as the baseline for our analysis in the Torah. You have a good time, Joe Franco? So now, what happens is like this. In our parasha, the parasha says that remember what I did in Mitzrayim. I brought the Arbeh. So the pasuk says, "Et asher et alalti b'Mitzrayim." Remember the ridicule that I made to the Egyptians. It seems that Makat Arbeh made the Egyptians laughing stock. The Mefarshim all ask, you know, every plague really made the Egyptians a laughing stock. Why by this plague does it say, "Ulma'at esaper be'oznei bincha b'nukat asher et alalti b'Mitzrayim"? What, the Alilah started now with Arbeh? The Alilah already was a makadam, was a joke. You know, every plague was a prank on the Egyptians. Why now does the Torah say, "Oh, makat arbeh, tasheret alalti"? So we explained from the Ben Ish Chai. The Ben Ish Chai said that if you look at the end of last week's parasha, at the end of parashat Va'era, it says that v'hachita v'akusemet lo nuku ki afilot hema. That in Barad, which was basically these hailstones, it knocked out everything that they had. It knocked out all their, all their vegetation, all their trees. Baruch haba, Mars. So it knocked out all their vegetations. It knocked out Baruch haba, Baruch haba. It knocked out all their trees. It knocked out everything. So when the Egyptians finished the plague, the Egyptians said what many people say after a plague: it could have been worse. What do they mean that they said it could have been worse? They said, listen, Moshe Rabbeinu, if he was really calculating correctly, he would have waited a few more weeks until the wheat crop grew and the spelt crop grew, and then he really would have taken us out, because the wheat crop and the spelt crop is a primary sustenance. So they said, you know what, could have been worse. You know, if it happened 3 weeks later, then we really would have been in trouble. So, so they looked at that as Moshe Rabbeinu is inaccurate. Now, Moshe Rabbeinu really didn't do his homework, that if he really wanted to debilitate the economy of Paro, just take the whole thing, honey, take the whole thing. Take the whole thing. No.
I'm opening for you guys.
That's okay, but we're in the middle of a class. I mean, it interrupts. So. I don't know if you realize that. That's okay. Yeah. Okay, we're going to have now, Rabotai. But now let's just pay attention to the class, and then we'll have dessert. Rabotai, we have over here a question that Paro had. Moshe Rabbeinu, it's a good makkah, but it's not a perfect makkah. So all of a sudden, the wheat starts to grow and the spelt starts to grow. Paro meets with his economist and says, "All right, listen, could have been worse. At least we got the primary crop here." And the second it starts to grow, the next day, the arbeh comes, the locust come. The locusts come and they eat all that. So look at the joke that we made on Paro. We gave Paro a false false hope. You know, and that's the key. You know, you sucker punch him, you know, and then you knock him out. So God says, when it comes to Makat Arbeh, go to Et Asher Et Alalti B'Mitzrayim. Go look at the mockery that I made of the guy. I made the guy after Makat Barat walk around like a ge'eh. Hey, I survived the Makat. You tipesh, you don't know what's coming. You don't know that there's a part beta. So therefore, Barad is part one and Arbeh is part two. You know, Barad started the job and purposely did not finish the job. So Paro will think that he still has some hope, and then Arbeh comes, which is the 1-2 punch, and knocks him out the Shirat Alati. So therefore, Rabbi Yehuda, when he's giving the Simanim, he says, I know that they're in separate parashiyot. I know that. But you must know Be'ahav, that Barad and Arbeh are really connected, because they're, you know, finishing the job that Barad did not. Hence the Rabbi Yehuda was giving a chokhmah here to don't forget that Barad and Arbeh are really connected. And that's probably going back to my question, why the parasha is called Parashat Bo. Bo is Rashi Tevot Barad Arbeh. It's coming to hint that don't forget last week's Barad. You know, Barad is connected to this week's parasha as well. You know, so therefore, there's a remez to that connection in the language of Bo itself. There's another thing that they say that also this created havoc for Paro, the Makat Arbeh. There was big mahlokot in territory between the African nations. Egypt is in Africa. And the African nations were questioning the borders. There was always a mahlokot between Egypt and its bordering nations, where the border ends, where the borderline is. Countries sometimes have that argument, you know, that the Israel and Egypt has that all day long with the Sinai. Where does it end, you know? So when they brought the frogs, the Sefaradim, it says that they were going to jump around Bechol Givul Mitzrayim. And everybody knew that. There's called Givul Mitzrayim. So when the frogs were jumping around, so all the neighboring countries paid attention to where exactly they stopped. Understand?
Set the border.
So that set the border for them. So and there was a lot of losses for Egypt. Besides what the frogs did to them, it also caused a lot of land loss for them. Because now everybody says, hey, listen, they took pictures. Hey, look, why doesn't the frog go over the line there? Because it's not Givul Mitzrayim anymore. So all of a sudden, a lot of land that Egypt was claiming was theirs, the Sefaradim now proved that that land does not belong to them. So all of a sudden, Egypt became much more small. Now, what they do in the Gemara says that there's certain trees that you plant at the border in order to make the border, you know, they put the trees over there to make the border, you know, the borderlands, so everybody sees it over there. So the Mefarshim explain that when they must have put the trees, you know, on the border, just so now the new border, I guess, where it was. And then it says that when Barad came, so Barad knocked down all the trees, and now there started to be mahlokot on the borders again. So the Barad, and then the Arbek, so the Egyptians were happy. Because once the trees got knocked down from the Barad, they said, beauty, now there's no marker for the border, so we can start to, you know, expand again. Yeah? From the plague of Sephardia to Barad, they were in trouble. But Barad came and killed all the trees. Now the Egyptians, there's no more trees, so now we push the border. But then Arbeh came, and it says that Arbeh only came in the borders of Egypt again. So the enemies had another proof. So therefore, et asher et alalti b'mitzrayim, again, that false sense of hope that they had, that now we'll get our land back. So when they have the meeting, they come along and say, listen, it couldn't have been worse. You know, at least the Barad knocked down all the trees, and now we don't have to worry about a defined border. We can take back our land. And the next plague is Arbeh, and Moshe Rabbeinu said, don't worry, Arbeh is going to be Bechol Gevul Mitzrayim. And then the enemies came along and said, Toda Rabah, it's the same spot again. And then it reversed the Paro's ruling. So he just when he was about to grab some more land, the Arbeh came back and said, Paro, don't be so greedy. You're not taking any land. The border is going to be reminded again to you by the, so that's Hashem Allah be Mitzrayim. We made a mockery of this Paro. That's another yet an explanation. It's a nice one. So that's that. So anyway, what happens over here in the parasha? Paro's not acquiescing. We talked about Makat Choshek also. That's the next plague. And then you have, you know, Makar Choshech was for 6 days. So there was no Makar Choshech on Shabbat, Mefarshim say. I once heard an explanation why there was no Makar Choshech on Shabbat. For good reason. Rashi tells us, oddly, why did the Makar Choshech come? He doesn't tell us the reason for any of the makot, but Makat Choshech, he tells us the reason. He says two reasons. A lot of Jews died in Makat Choshech, and God didn't want to see the Egyptians to see that the Jews were dying. And by the time the lights came back on, the Jews had buried them already. So there was no record that they saw them die. There was a chance for the Jews to bury their dead. Second reason is that the Jews went and made inspections into the Egyptians' homes to see where the valuables were. So when the lights come back on, the Egyptians will not be able to deny that they don't have any valuables. Burying the dead and inspecting homes for valuables are two things that are forbidden on Shabbat. So therefore, the plague, if the plague's purpose was to give us a chance to bury our dead and search for valuables, so therefore that would not serve a purpose on Shabbat, therefore the plague did not land on Shabbat. It would be asur for us to do that. That's Makat Choshech. Then, of course, we know about Makat Bechorot. And then we leave. Now, before we leave, the parasha tells us we needed to do two mitzvot. I want to talk about that for a minute. I'm giving you an overview of the parasha. I saw that you were involved in your bloods. Bloods. And I said, with the blood you shall live, with the blood you shall live. And the Gemara says, what bloods are we talking about here? Dam Pesach and Dam Milah. The two bloods, the blood of the Korban Pesach, the Paschal Lamb, as we call it, that was blood. And they needed to sprinkle the blood on the doorpost, and the mezuzot, the lintel, the doorpost, the meshkof, the mezuzot, and then the dam of the Brit Milah itself. We know Dam Milah. I asked a question, I'll give an answer to it also. Which came first? Dam Pesach or Dam Milah? Again, if I had to guess, I would have said Dam Milah came first. And then Dam Pesach. As far as I know in the halakha, I don't think you're allowed to slaughter a Korban Pesach if you don't have a Brit Milah. Is that a law somewhere?
Yeah.
Okay, so therefore, it should be then Dam Milah and then Dam Pesach. That's the way. But for some, we always say Dam Pesach and Dam Milah. So, and also there's a Hazal, Dam Pesach, Dam Milah. There's a Hazal somewhere that says that they did the Milah at night, which also was a problem. You know, you don't do Brit Milah at night. Right? Mayom. There's different issues. So one issue I saw is that the Gabe Korban Pesach of Mitzrayim, there was no problem to slaughter it, Arel. The only Isur was to eat it, Ba'arelut. So therefore they were able to slaughter the Korban as Arel, and then before they ate it, they would do the Brit Mesa. So therefore Dam Pesach was able to come before Dam Milah, and we shouldn't have a problem that they did the Milah at night, if you want to say, because it's called the Matan Torah. It wasn't the official Brit Milah of Matan Torah. Or you could say that this Milah was not a Milah of Milah, it was to allow them to eat Korban Pesach. There's a Sevarah like that, I think. So a Milah, that's not a Milah of Orla, so to speak, for Milah, but it's a Milah Lahatir. So that's such a Milah as Kasher Balayla. Although we can give another terutz is about that, is what the Hazal say, that actually the night of Pesach, it says, was light. Hazak Baruch. The night of Pesach, it was light like day. That's what Gemara Hakamim say. There's a language that says, I once made this diyuk. It says when the rabbis were staying up all night in Bnei Berak, that was one of the earliest Pesach trips they had. They didn't have Miami in those days. They went to Bnei Berak for Pesach. Okay, it's not the best, luxurious place. But like I said, they didn't have Thailand. They didn't have all these exotic destinations. So the five rabbis, they went for Bnei Berak for Pesach. Okay? And they were sitting around the table. It says, Shayu mesaperim bisyat Mitzrayim kol oto halayla. I asked a simple question. Layla seemingly is nekeva. I should say kol ota halayla. Kol oto halayla. Correct? Huh? Well, oto is masculine. Layla is feminine. So it should say kol ota halayla. It's written incorrectly in the Agadah. It says Maaseh with the five rabbis. Shayu mesubim b'bnei Berak. Shayu mesapinim b'siyat Mitzrayim kol oto halayla. So the Mefarshim explained that if you remember, these rabbis, they didn't even know what time the Zman of Kiryat Shema was. Why didn't they know what time the Kiryat Shema was? The students had to come in. Abotenu, Igi Azman. It says because it was always light for them the whole night. So therefore they couldn't know the difference when it was really night or when it was day. So therefore it says, Oto Laila. That Laila had a din of Yom. So they gave a remez by saying Oto. Because Yom is Zachar. So Kol Oto, the Laila had a din of Oto. And why did that happen that night? Because they were trying to commemorate what happened the night of Mitzrayim. That's part of the Zikiyat Mitzrayim, is to try to do it the way they did it. So these rabbis were able to learn so much, where they were able to bring a light like it was the night of Mitzrayim. So if you learn like that, that the Laila is like Yom, so therefore the Milah was Kasher. That's another answer. Some say that the reason why what happened was is that HaKadosh Baruch Hu knew that you're going to tell these people to do a Brit Milah. It's not so simple to tell them to do a Brit Milah. Some of these people were old people already.
Yeah,
not only that, you're telling them, do a Brit Milah, and then the next day, on the run.
Go on the road.
Go on the road.
Dangerous.
3 days.
3 days.
Hazak Baruch. Very good. So don't think it was an easy thing for the Jewish people to do this Brit Milah. I want you to make aware of that. It's a big thing to ask them. You know, tell me to give some tzedakah. Give ma'aser. Okay, I'll give ma'aser. Brit Milah. So they resisted. But you should know, you're going to ask me a question. What do you mean? They didn't have Brit Milah in Egypt? Do me a favor, could you bring me the Rambam? Hilchot Avodah Zarah. That's a question in itself. What do you mean Brit Milah? They weren't Jewish in Egypt? They weren't Jewish? You want to tell me in the desert they didn't do Brit Milah? That was a health issue. They couldn't do Brit Milah in the desert because of the wind and all that stuff. But in Mitzrayim, they didn't have knives. They didn't have, they must have known about Brit Milah. Avraham already had Brit Milah. Moshe Rabbeinu did a Brit Milah on his son, Tzipora, whatever, the Tzor. So what is this business over here that you needed to convince the Jewish people to take a Brit Milah? If I'm not mistaken, there's a Rambam in Ilchot Avodah Zarah. If you have a minute, Rabotai, I will try to read to you this Rambam. Let's see where it is. My memory says it's in Avodah Zarah Perek Gimal. It's a famous one. Avodah Zarah is on page 48. That's correct. And Perek Shilishi. Let's see. Let's see where we are. Perek Rishon. Machila. Perek Rishon. Beautiful. So he says, he's giving you the history of the world. Bimei Enosh. He starts from Enosh. I kind of want to talk about Enosh. But basically he says they were doing Avodah Zarah. And they went off the Derech. Then it says, Kevan Shenigmal Etan Ze Avraham Abinu came. He's called Etan. Strong one. Etchil Leshotet B'Dato Avu Katan. He was a young guy. V'lachshob B'Yom U'Balayla. He's thinking day and night. Could the world happen by itself? You know, in the schools they were teaching evolution. He said, is that possible? Who's controlling it? Somebody controls the New Jersey Transit. Well, that's a minor operation compared to the world. Cannot manage itself. Anyway, the Pasuk says, everybody was making a mistake. When he figured it out, he made fights with everybody. And he got saved. He started to call out, you know, to preach the city to city, etc. So far, so good. Thousands of people. He brought them to the truth. He taught it to Yitzhak, and Yitzhak gave it to Yaakov. But Yaakov Abinu Lamad Banav Kulam, Vivdi Levi. He separated Shevet Levi, Umanau Rosh, Voshivo Bishiva, Lelamed Derech Hashem, and Azmon Mitzvat Avraham. So Levi was in charge of handing over the tradition. There was a nation that knew God, family of Yaakov. Here's the key. The Jews started to forget their tradition and started to pick up the Egyptian way. ולעבוד עבודה זרה כמותן, חוץ משבט לוי שעמד במצוות אבות. They stayed loyal to the tradition and the mitzvah of the father. ומעולם לא עבד שבט לוי עבודה זרה. That's very interesting. Now, what's mitzvot אבות?
Tradition.
What's the mitzvah? There's no mitzvot yet. The only mitzvah that the avot really had was the Brit Milah. So Rambam is saying here that only Shevet Levi kept the Brit Milah. Besides Shevet Levi, everybody else, understand?
Wow, the Shevetim didn't have
it? No, they didn't do it, but Rambam says.
They abstained.
V'chazru l'lmod ma'aseim kishayu b'mitzrayim. ולעבוד עבודה זרה כמותם, חוץ משבט לוי שעמד במצוות אבות, ומעולם לא עבד שבט לוי עבודה זרה. וכמעט קט, העיקר ששתל אברהם נעקר. I mean, that tree that Abraham planted almost was uprooted. Abotai, you want to judge them, you don't want to judge them. The point over here is, the point is the facts. The point is the facts. Yoru mishpatecha leYaakov Levi. What does it say about Levi? Ubritecha yinsoru. They kept the brit. Where did they kept the brit? In Mitzrayim. Goes back to my original question. So the majority of the people were not circumcised, by the way. You know, a Jew doesn't become circumcised. Until he becomes circumcised, he's not Jewish, technically. You know, he needs a brit milah to be considered Jewish. So Borei Olam says, listen, you want me to take you out? God did us a big favor, by the way. God didn't have to take only Shevet Levi out, by the way. God told Avraham Avinu, I'm taking out your nation, B'chush Gadol, that's Shevet Levi. Baruch Shomer Avtachato L'Yisrael. But he kept his word. He took out everybody. He didn't have to take out only Shevet Levi. So he did us a favor. So I give you a chance. Do Brit Milah.
So
right before they left, they did a Brit Milah. The problem was, it was very difficult to do the Brit Milah. So the Midrash says, that what did HaKadosh Baruch Hu do? He told the people, he told Moshe Rabbeinu, Moshe, you go make Korban Pesach first. Moshe Rabbeinu was circumcised. He says, you go bring the brit, you go bring your Korban Pesach. He starts to roast it. It'll be roasted in, you know, the public. You have to roast the brit milah. The Pasuk says, Al tochelu memenu na. You can't eat it raw. It has to be roasted. Kim sedi esh. The Gemara says, or the Midrash says, that they learned the laws of Korban Pesach from Avraham Avinu when he had the guests. They said, because what did Avraham Avinu say? It says, V'sha'anu. What did he say? What did Avraham Avinu say? Abotai, I'll open up the parasha. The pasuk says, when he invited the guests into the house, Imna matzati hen be'enecha. Yukachna me'atmayim. So it says, Moshe Rabbeinu, Avraham told the guests, nah. So the Torah says by the Korban Pesach, at tochelu memenu na. Even though the na's are different, na's. What is this? So in Uman, was it na na, nahman me'uman? Was it na na? Explanation is, by Avraham he was saying, yukachna, please take some water. By the Korban Pesach, at tochelu memenu na is raw, naye, raw. So it's a different na. Okay, the Gemara says, na, na. Just, so I saw an explanation is no, that's not teaching you that. That what's the reason why Avraham told them to take some water? To clean the Avodah Zarah that was on their feet. So they were the same reason why you have to do the Korban Pesach. Because the Korban Pesach was the Avodah Zarah of the Egyptians. So therefore they're giving you the reason why Hashem says Korban Pesach. Na, na. Just Avraham Binu said take water to get rid of the Avodah Zarah on their feet, the dust. So therefore God sent the Korban Pesach also to destroy the Avodah Zarah of, that's the na-na connection. Not how to eat it, but the purpose of it. And about that what I just said?
Yeah.
Okay, anyway, so you see that. So Moshe Rabbeinu, he brings his Korban Pesach. Now everybody's smelling a barbecue. You get hungry. But you know what? If somebody told you, if you would walk down the block and somebody's grilling salchicha on the barbecue, and you say, wow, she'd be genuine, the salchicha. And you tell the guy, you got any extra? You tell him, what do you mean, extra? I got as much as you want to eat. But listen, you got to do a brit milah first. Do me a favor. You take the salchicha, I'll go home. Which is as much as we like to eat a hamburger or a Delmonico steak with the marrow. But you know, I'm not going to do a brit milah for that. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu did something. It says he brought the fragrance of Gan Eden onto the meat. So this was not a regular smell of barbecue. This already had the fragrance of Gan Eden. Now, David says it's irresistible. He knows. How do we know it's irresistible? The Gemara tells a story. It was a famous story of one of the rabbis. And he was with Eliyahu Navi. And, he was having a hard time. So when the Anavi said, what are you complaining for? What are you worried about? I'll take you upstairs. You can take whatever you want. Went upstairs. He sees all the trees over there in Gan Eden. He took a few leaves and he put in his pocket. He said, you're a rich man now. What do you want? These leaves are golden leaves, whatever they are. That's it. He goes down. When he goes down, the heavenly voice comes and says, who is this guy that ate from his chilek? He says, you know what? I don't want to eat from my chilek. I'll suffer here. So he went and he took the leaves back out of his pocket, Rabah Barahuna, and he told the Nehemiah, do me a favor, take it back. The Gemara says, however, the garment that he was wearing got the fragrance of the Gan Eden, and he was able to sell it for 12,000 gold coins. Just because it had the smell of Gan Eden, and he was able to become rich and support his whole family. That means the Gan Eden he didn't have, he gave it back. But it was in his pocket for a few seconds. The absorption of that Gan. So could you imagine that Kadosh Baruch Hu sent out the Gan Eden to the beat? Now Moshe Rabbeinu's carving, like Shawarma is carving. Now they walk by and say, holy cow, can we have the Mamash, holy cow? Can we have a piece of this? Moshe Rabbeinu says, listen, you want a piece? I'd love to give you a piece. But to eat this, you got to be circumcised. The fragrance was so strong. You know something? Allah. But we're willing to do B'ri Milah. That's why it says, Dam Pesach v'dam Milah. Because Dam Pesach came first, but they couldn't eat it. They couldn't eat it. When they saw the Pesach, then already, since they wanted to eat it, it was the Dam Milah that came afterwards. And we can say very simple that the slaughtering of the Korban Pesach is during the day. You don't eat it till the night, so Moshe Rabbeinu slaughtered it during the day. They smelt it during the day. They took the B'ri Milah during the day also. You could say they did the B'ri Milah during the day. It's another way of. I saw another explanation that says, why did they have to wait 4 days? Why did they have to wait 4 days after they took the Korban Pesach? Huh? Okay, that's nice. So you can do that in 1 day. Okay, you can do it in 2 days. So the question is why 4 days? So I saw an explanation is. Because according to this shita, no, they took the Brit Milah first, and then they had to wait 3 days to heal, and then on the fourth day already they started to. Because you can't bring Korban Pesach if you're sick either. It says En mevim et ha-pesach al ha-chole. So according to that shita, the 4 days was for the Brit Milah, 3 days to recover, and then the fourth day already they brought the. That's another way of. My question now is, what did they have to do these mitzvot for? What did they have to do these mitzvot for? There's many mitzvot. God could have told them, like I just told you, you want to go out of Egypt? Rabotai, mishloach manot ish l're'eu matrot evyonim. Everybody make a mishloach manot package and give it to your friend. Finished. Make it something like that. What are the inyan over here of these two mitzvot, dam pesach, dam milah? We just recently learned in Gemara, in Berachot, in the Daf Hayomi. One of the rabbis asked that why in the earlier generations God made miracles for them, and in our generations God doesn't make any more miracles for us. And he gives an example. He says, in our generation there's no rain. We scream and scream and scream. They don't answer us. But in the generations of Rabbi Yehuda, when there was a drought, he would just take off his shoe. They didn't even start, but the rain would come. Miracles. So Gemara wants to know, what's the reason why God behaved with that generation? So the Gemara says, maybe because they learned better than us. The Gemara says, actually the learning today is more expansive than it was in the old days. We have more books. They learned the Babas, Baba Kama, Mitziah, Batra, Nezikin. We learn Shisha Sidre Mishnah. Uksin, forget about it. 13 yeshivas learning Uksin. So, Otaharot. So what's going on? So the Gemara says an amazing thing. He says, but those old timers, they had Mesirut Nefesh. They sacrificed for God. So when you sacrifice for God, he makes miracles. The Gemara tells a story, how they sacrificed, whatever the story is. But you see over here, that miracles happen not for nothing. Miracles have to be activated by the person. The miracle has to be activated by sending up something to Kadosh Baruch Hu. We send up Mesirut Nefesh to sacrifice. Yesterday, one of our members, Mr. Menedjed, said that he believes it's a midah keneged midah, because to give up your life is to go against your nature. To go against your nature. Nature is to protect your life. You want to protect your life. I think that's an instinct. You know? Flight and fright. Fright and flight, however they say. You protect yourself. So when a person goes against his nature, God also breaks the nature. The nature is the way the world is, but and this is above the nature. So it's midah keneged midah. Nice explanation. If you see Mr. Menedjer, you can tell him that he was honorably mentioned. The Ben Ish Chai says a different explanation. He says, listen, God doesn't do a miracle to a person because miracles you have to pay for. With you, miracles are for free. There's a price for miracles. And you know what they take away from your miracle? They take away your zichuyot. They take away your zichuyot. So therefore, you know, who wants miracles? If you're going to get charged for them, here we said, the rabbi went up and he said, oh, I don't want to get charged, take it back. It says. So the Ben Ish Chai says a big chiddush here. He says, listen. He says, if they do a miracle for a person, basically why? They saved his life. They saved his life. So he says, we saved your life, you got to pay for it. Usually a miracle is they saved his life. Like a miracle like that. We're talking about a miracle of saving his life. Those days they were going to die of the famine. If the rain didn't come, they were all going to die of dehydration. They saved their lives. They saved their life. That's usually when this happens. So usually people, they love life. They want to live. So God says, hey, you love life, you want to live, you got to pay for it. But the guy who's Moser Nefesh, what does he show? I love God more than life. I don't care to live. I want to die. I'll die for Hashem. So therefore God says, now that I gave him, how can I charge him? He didn't even want it. How can I charge him for it? He don't even want it. He's willing to be Moser Nefesh. He don't want the item. I'm going to charge him for something he's willing to give up. How can I charge him for that? The guy who wants to live, he wants it. So therefore you got to pay for it. The guy who's Moser Nefesh, Borei Olam, life is not as important to me as you are. Therefore I'm willing to die for it. So God does him a miracle and he keeps him alive. Pay me. I didn't want to live. I was willing to die. Why should I pay for it? Understand? So therefore, Mesirut Nefesh activates miracles. However you want to learn it. But the Mesirut Nefesh over here. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, listen, you're going to come out of Egypt and you're going to need a lot of miracles on Yam Suf. By the way, what is going to happen over here? The Ma'am Lo'ez brings down 50 miracles that happened at Kiryat Yam Suf. 50. And he lists them. Many years ago when I was in yeshiva, before Pesach, I actually opened the Me'am Lo'ez. I had a Hebrew copy, and I made a list of all the 50. I didn't do anything great, I just copied them over on a list. I wanted to have them handy on the night of Pesach. And I got up and I said, Botai, I'm not going to tell you all the 50 miracles happening. And the people were spellbound by all the 50 miracles. Truth is, there wasn't. After the third one, I said, okay, you're not going to read all 50, are you? I got past like 3 or 4 and I said, okay, just read it to yourself. But nonetheless, there were 50 miracles that took place on at Kesher. So miracles don't happen for nothing. So the Baruch Hu says, you got to do Mesirut Nefesh, buddy. You want to get married, you got to do Mesirut Nefesh. You have to show that your life is not worth anything and that I'll save your life. So what happened? Brit Milah is Mesirut Nefesh. What do you think? To do such a thing, a Brit Milah? Rabotai, not an easy thing for a 50-year-old to do Brit Milah. No anesthesia.
There's no self-interest.
There's no anesthesia, by the way. So it's painful. And knowing that after that, you got to run. You got to run now to... That's like a Brit Milah of Avraham Avinu. They activated Zichut of Avraham. And then, like you said, the Pesach is... Pesach, like Joe said, tremendous Mesirut Nefesh. The Egyptians are going to kill you. You're taking the Qurban and you're slaughtering it in front of their eyes, and you're going to take the blood and use the blood as paint? That's a bigger busha. Everybody painted the house red. And what do you, there was no Benjamin Moore, they used the Qurban Pesach. So that's a bigger busha to the Egyptians, that you're using the animal in order to decorate the homes. You know, they did some renovations before they left. So that's a bigger busha for them. So it's the mesirut nefesh of these two mitzvot that actually caused the miracle. I will tell you, there's a lot to say. We can't say everything, obviously. We said a lot already. I'll just tell you what the Mekubalim say, just to be yotze. Megaleh Amukot talks about it. Ben Wari mentions it. They talk about the Pegam of Adam Rishon when he ate from the tree, and when Hava ate from the tree. It created a lot of flaws. Just like any time any of us make an avirat, creates a flaw. You shouldn't think, Adam Rishon, what do you do to us? We do it ourselves. You know, let somebody who's clean throw stones at Avraham Abin or Adam Rishon. We're just telling you the facts, as Elliot mentioned. One of the pigamim that he did was, it says that there's a Shem Adanut, Aleph, Dalet, Nun, and Yud, and the Dalet left. Don't ask me where it went, it left. There's a Shem also Shin Dalet and Yud. The Dalet left. It was Pogem Tu Shemot. It was Pogem Shem Adanut, and it was Pogem Shem Shakal. So the Baal Megaleh Amukot says, from the Zera, the Zera Berach, some Sefer, he says that when God came to Hava, and Hava says, what do you want from me? The snake seduced me. He says, Hanahash is Shiani. So he says, Shiani, not Ziani, that's the Thai guy. Shiani. So he says, Shiani, actually, if you take the letters of Shin Dalet and Yud, and take the Dalet away, you have Shin Yud. And if you take Aleph Dalet Nun Yud, take the Dalet away, you have Ani. So he said, Danahash is Shiani. It caused the two Dalets to leave. And left the two Shemot instead of Shakai and Adanut, it left it to Shiani. That's the Pegam. So that's the tikkun that we come to make. We got to bring the Dalets back. That's what Abinu Ari writes, that if you look in the Shema, there's two Dalets in Shema. Shema is still Adonai Elohim Adonai Ahad. That's one Dalet. Baruch Shem K'mok Tolam Ba'ed is the second Dalet. So the two Dalets of the Kiryat Shema, that's why we have two Pesukim with Dalets, and Mitaken the Dalets. And that's what Avotenu HaKadoshim were involved with, trying to bring back the Dalets. Understand?
Yeah. Why were they taken away?
Because they ate from the tree.
For that reason, we took the Dalets.
Well, that's what you have a better reason. What you have a better reason to take away the Dalet? No, it's a big thing to eat. It's a big thing to people give me the two Shemot. Avraham Avinu started the tikkun, obviously. Avraham Avinu started the tikkun. How do we know? We learned in Daf Yomi. Everything's in Daf Yomi, Rabotai. Just learn Daf Yomi. You know the whole Torah kula. Daf Yomi, if you remember, it said on one of the pages over there. That before Avraham Abinu, nobody called the Kadosh Baruch Hu Adon. He was the first one to refer to Kadosh Baruch Hu. By Bama Eda, he said, Bayomer Ado, he called him Adon. Wow. I mean, what is it, big thing? You say, until that point, it was a big pegam in the Shem Adanut. Anybody could say Adanut. It means he was mitakenet. Before Avraham Abinu, the world was missing it. Avraham was mitaken Shem Adanut. What other Shem was mitaken? You know, there's a custom that when a person does the Brit Milah, so they say, "Va'evor alayich ve'ech mitvosesa bedamayich." The mohel, have you ever seen, sticks his finger in the wine? Right. The poor rabbi, before he drinks, he's got the mohel's dirty fingers in the wine. You're worried about the coronavirus, and the mohel has his bloody fingers in the wine, and the poor rabbi is waiting to drink it. And the guy already is dipping his fingers in it. That's why don't take gift and it'll beat me laugh if you squirmish.
Only the pinky.
Okay, only the pinky. So now, and then what does he do? Worse, he takes the first drop and he puts it in the kid's mouth, and he takes another drop. After you put it in the kid's mouth, you have the kid's mouth alive, everything in there is in the wine open. Anyway, the point is, Shemir Pitayim Hashem, don't worry, nobody ever died from the wine of a Brit Milah. But the point is, the Mekubalim bring down that when the Mohel sticks the wine in the kid's mouth, he has to draw the Shem Shin Dalet Yud with his finger. Yeah, on the palate of the kid, he draws the Shin Dalet Yud, Shekai. Yeah, that's right. That means the Brit Milah, the Brit Milah is Inyan of the Shem Shakai. Inyan of the Shem Shakai. The Brit Milah is Megaleh the Shem Shakai in the person. If you remember when God told Abraham to do the Brit Milah, how does he introduce the Brit Milah? Ani kel Shaddai hitalech lefanai v'yetamim. Abraham, you fixed already the Adanut, now go fix the Shem Shakai. So Abraham Abinu actually made the tikkun of Adam Rishon. So, which is a great thing, by the way. This is a great thing. Yaakov Aminu cemented it with the two dalets because he added Baruch Shem Kavotol Le'olam Ba'ed in the Shema. So now you have it, you know, cemented. But what does the Rambam say? The Rambam tells us what we just read. V'kem'at ka taya va'ikar sheshatal Avraham ne'ekar. This tikkun that Avraham Abinu had made, ne'ekar. All that hard work, with it was easy. Avraham Abinu did tremendous work. So Bnei Yisrael would have to go back before they left Egypt and make the tikkun of Adam HaRishon. I'm sorry, of Avraham Abinu, which is the tikkun of Avraham. You understand? Rabotai, there's a lot to say here, but the time is short. You know, when God told Moshe Rabbeinu to tell the Jews to put the blood on the doors, God told them to put it on the mezuzot and then on the mashkof. And the Moshe Rabbeinu switched it and said, do it on the mashkof and then the mezuzot. So there's different explanations. Some explanation is that they say the mezuzot was connected to Moshe and Haron. And the mashkof is connected to Kadosh Baruch Hu. So God's telling Moshe, it's your zechut, you did a lot of good work, you go first. And Moshe Rabbeinu said, no, God, you go first. But the other Sadiqim say that the mashkof is connected to Abraham and the mezuzot is connected to Yitzhak and Yaakov. So Moshe Rabbeinu, why Hashem should do the mezuzot first, we have to analyze. He was giving kavod to Moshe and Aaron, but he knew that there was another kavanah. Moshe Rabbeinu was telling the people, we need to do this tikkun, keneged the mashkof, which keneged Avraham Abinu. It's the highest of davot. He's etan, he's the highest of davot. Gadol sheba anakim, that's keneged the mashkof. We're now about to make the tikkun. What's the tikkun? We need to fix the dalets. That's why the pasuk comes along and says you have to put it on the two mezuzot. There's a big secret. If you ever see a mezuzah, what do you put a mezuzah on your door for? To make the same tikkun of Adam HaRishon. The numerical value of mezuzah is how much?
67.
Yeah, it's close enough, 65. But the point is, mezuzah is gematria 65, which is Shem Adanut. And what's the Shem that's outside the mezuzah? Shakai. So basically a mezuzah makes that. So therefore, in those days they didn't have mezuzot. So therefore we had to make the tikkun of putting the blood on the shtei mezuzot and the mashkov. That's the inyan of making the tikkun of the dalets. The dalet of the adanut and the dalet of the shakai. That was on the mezuzot. That's basically where we put a mezuzah. And what was this blood made from? What was the mixture of this blood? Well, dam milah, that's Shem Shakai. That's Shem Shakai right there. And Dam Pesach. Well, what was the reason why we brought Dam Pesach? We were coming to say to the Egyptians that God is in charge. That's Shem Adanut. But the Egyptians came along and said, the master is... basically, we were telling the Egyptians, you're not our Adon. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is the Adon. And you worshipped. So therefore, they said the Korban Pesach was actually connected to Shem Adanut. So therefore, you have the two bloods which are connected to the two Shemot, we put a mak mezuzah. See what's happening? So that's why those two mitzvot were necessary before we left in order to replant the tree of Avraham Avinu that was uprooted before we left. That's what the pasuk says. That in the Gemara quoted it that when a person enters the Bet Knesset, he should enter two doors. The Gemara says you have to enter two doors. That means the zman that it takes to enter two doors. You shouldn't enter the Bet Knesset right away and pray. You should wait a couple of seconds. The Gemara quotes a pasuk: Ashrei Adam Shomei Ali Lishkod Al Daltotai Yom Yom. And the Mekubalim say that the Daltotai is the two Dalits. Daltotai. That's the key. Lishkod Al Daltotai Yom Yom. That every day when a person goes and puts his finger on the mezuzah, Daltotai. The mezuzah actually is making the tikkun of the two Dalits. When that tikkun started in Mitzrayim. You understand what's going on so far? So that's the depth of why those two mitzvot specifically. Because those two mitzvot metaken, these two shemot that were nifgam. Somebody asked a good question. I'd like to ask that question and give an answer to it. The time is short, so I'm going to have to cut my words. Already we're speaking for an hour, Jacob. You got your money's worth, don't worry. Isn't it strange that right after the whole story of Yetziat Mitzrayim in this parasha, they talk about the mitzvah of tefillin? What is tefillin doing in this week's parasha? I mean, I'm not against it. You can talk about it whatever you want, but why all of a sudden right now there's no tefillin? The Mefashim say that we know that when a person wears the tefillin every single day, so we know that there's a sheen on the box. Sfaradim, we have a dalid on the back of the head, and we have a yud on the shil and the shil yad. So tefillin also is so. Therefore, once we are already involving ourselves in, mezuzot and the whole tikkun, so what else? Okay, here. So what do we do today? So you have tefillin now. I will tell you the Gemara says back to Daf Yomi. We didn't get to it yet. We're going to get to it in the next chapter. It says one of the rabbis was laughing. Okay, you're allowed to laugh. But he was laughing excessively, and they said, "Gilu berada, too much laughing." Ashimales chokpinu, and what do you say? Tefillin kamanachna. He said, "I'm wearing tefillin. I'm wearing tefillin." The Gemara says that he said, "Don't worry, I have the fear of the master on me." When a person wears tefillin, the tefillin is considered an ot. What's an ot? The Mefashim explained that's like a master brands his ebed. He puts a sign on it, this belongs to me. So the tefillin is called an ot. It's an ot that you are a servant to the master. So therefore, tefillin is an inyan of also adanut. So when a person wears the tefillin, you also have inyan of shakai and adanut. So therefore, right after the whole story of Korban Pesach, the Torah comes along and says, there's a way to do that every single day. And that's why the poskim say that it's really better to put the tefillin on outside and then walk into the door, so you get both now. You walk into the door with the tefillin, Shem Shakai. So that's why it says, daltotai, and you're doing both. You're doing the tefillin, and you're doing the door. You're getting in order to make the tikkun up. And that's why Moshe Rabbeinu started with the mashkof, to remind us that we're making the tikkun of Avraham Avinu in order to fix the mezuzot, which is daltotai, which is the two shemot, mezuzah gematria adanut, and the shem shakai that we put on the outside. So obviously these two mitzvot were not picked randomly. According to the pshat that we said, it was for mesilut nefesh, because these two mitzvot actually activate mesilut, which was the precursor to miracles. And then the deeper explanation is it was to activate, these two shemot that were nifgam in an earlier generation. All right, because the time is short. Amen.